photographs and memories. A Travel Market Life series sponsored by Atomize.
My memory maker today is Fernando Vives. Welcome to Photographs and Memories with me, Michael McCartan. Each episode, we invite an industry professional to share three photographs and a treasured souvenir from their travels, representing moments particularly important to them. Join us as we go on a journey through time to explore the significance of each. Check the podcast description to view the images of these treasured memories.
Photographs and memories.
Fernando is the Chief Commercial Officer of the NH Hotel Group. Before joining NH in 2014, he held various positions at Le Méridien, The Ritz, Hesperia, and Meliá Hotels. He is an expert in revenue management and distribution, with experience in both urban hotels and resorts. In 2018, he was recognized as one of Europe's top 20 extraordinary minds and revenue optimization leaders. Being a passionate hotelier, he established the Expert on Revenue Management Master's degree at Universidad Rey Juan Carlos in Madrid, and is co-founder of the Cool Food Company, a successful F&B operator. Fernando lives in Madrid, Spain, with his wife and two children.
Photographs and Memories, a Travel Market Life series sponsored by Atomize.
Fernando Vives, welcome to Photographs and Memories.
Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here.
Please tell me how you came to work in hospitality.
Well, that's a very good question. It's well, I consider myself a hotelier, and it's funny because when I was very young, I had a thing for computers. So I was actually I built my first computer when I was just 9 years old. There was no internet, nothing around. So I was basically, I have an older brother who's 10 years ahead of me. So I was always taking his computers when he was leaving. I remember the first Spectrum, then the Commodore 128, and playing these games. And then as I was always with computers, I basically decided to build my own computer. So I was always with computers, and up to a point where I even enrolled for university to study computer science. But it's true that my mother, who has a great influence, always have had a great influence, I would say in me, but in my entire family, she's very influential. She was raised in a hotel. So my grandfather, who I never had the chance to meet him, as he passed away when my mother was only 17 years old, he was a hotelier. So he owned two hotels in Alicante, which is on the east side of Spain. But I was raised always with some kind of these hotel stories on the people she was able to meet when she was at the hotel, where how she was having breakfast with clients, and then the place was very popular with bullfighting. And I have to say that I was raised as well with a lot of norms on how to behave when we were eating. You know, I never had lunch or dinner with my pajamas, always drinking glass water with glass wines, even if there was water, because this is the way she was raised, and always being like very polite, even if it was informal, because this is the way she was raised. Oh. So I always had a thing about hotels, up to a point where I was always thinking, okay, what to do in my future. But as I was spending so much time with my friends building computers and with computers, I said, no, computer science, this is what I want to do. I want to dedicate myself just to be in front of a computer. And I signed up for computer science in a U.S. university. I always thought that the way I was looking at the studies on how computer science was what was done in Spain was not the traditional way that I liked to learn computer science. You know, it was an 5 years of engineering. First year was transversal to most of the engineering careers. So basically, you wouldn't touch a computer until you were like the second year. So I said, I mean, that's going to kill me, because I really like to touch and program and be in front of the computer and touch the computer. So during that summer, I basically changed my mind. And then I said, okay, now going to the U.S., now, do I see myself really being in front of a computer 24 hours. So I started having a change of heart during that summer, and I was starting university, going to the US in September, and this was probably July and August. I finished high school, all that stuff, and then 1 week I started thinking very very strongly about changing how I would redirect my career, my studies, and then I finally said, you know what? I always had a thing about hotels, which is true. I mean, every time we were traveling to cities with my family, before going to museums or restaurants, I was visiting hotels and looking at the brochures of the destinations. There was no internet there, and then I said, listen, if I live in Spain, tourism is the first industry of the country, so I know that I may make a mistake, but for sure, I will never die of hunger if I dedicate to hospitality. So I decided to change, and then instead of studying computer science, I studied hospitality. So I went to hotel school in Madrid. I studied, which at that point was called tourism. So I went through the entire course, and then I finally did a master's degree in hotel management as well in Madrid.
Yep. Amazing. Yeah, and I was gonna sort of draw the parallels with your career in revenue management. So that sort of brought the computer science and the hospitality together in a very elegant way, I suppose.
We have a saying in Spain that says the cows they always face to the mountains. No, which basically means that in the end, I mean, I wanted to become a hotelier. I became a hotelier, but then I had this background and this passion about computers, the internet. I remember I had my first modem. I think it was like 1,440 bytes. It was like with all these noises, and then you had to connect because there was no service in Spain. So in the end, I think that I always found a way to be connected to technology, to science, and then applying that to my passion, which is as well hospitality and hotels.
No, amazing. Good stuff. Well, let's take a look at your first photograph. It's of your wife and you, a selfie taken on a building with, I think it's the Empire State Building in the background. Is that right?
Very close, very close. This is a picture taken actually 1 month ago. I wanted to choose pictures from 2022 because there is life before COVID and life after COVID. And it's true that after COVID, I don't know about you, but I had this need to travel as much as we could, first as a family, with my wife, and then, of course, professionally in my career at NH, where I'm mostly dedicating every single week, I'm somewhere in the world. And so I took this picture in May. It's at the Summit Center, which is at 101 Vanderbilt Building. This is one of the new observatories that there is in New York that opened, I think, just before the pandemic or just after the pandemic. So it was one of the observatories that we hadn't been in New York. New York is a city that we normally, before the pandemic, we visited between 2 to 3 times a year, my wife and myself, and then many other times if I had to be there professionally. So New York is a city that has always inspired us. I think the vibe, the level of creativity that this city has, it's incredible. And I was quite sad to see how the city was when we just visited in the month of May. So we've seen a city that has changed a little bit, not a lot. There are many people that say, oh, New York is completely different. Well, I think New York is and will always be New York. But you can tell how the city has suffered on all these people living. I just read that it's over close to 400,000 people that left Manhattan during the pandemic. And then, of course, you are missing around 2 million commuters on a daily basis. So this has had an impact in the island that has affected everything. Restaurants.
Those 400 people are permanent residents that have left. Wow.
Yeah. This is what I read. And it's so, but, you know, it's still, the city is vibrant. It will, it is New York. It will always be New York. And I'm sure that the city will recover extremely fast. And you can still see new places come in, and then all these new concepts and restaurants, and you see, wow, how this guy had the idea and the guts to open this concept. So it's always very inspiring. So this is a destination that we often go. Last but not least, we just opened our hotel last year, the NH Collection Madison Avenue, in May 2021. So we were in the midst of the pandemic. So it's a very rough time to open a hotel in Manhattan with over 300 keys. And it was another excuse to travel to New York to see our hotel, which is incredible, great location, 38th and Madison. And we truly enjoyed a fantastic weekend with great weather and of course, in our hotel and looking at all these different places that we had on the list, you know, like checking, boom, 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 boom.
Amazing. You know, it's interesting you say about that, about cities sort of losing their sparkle a little bit. I live in London and I can definitely sense that as well. And I wonder how long it's going to take before cities like New York, London, Tokyo, whatever, recover and become these destinations again.
I think there is the opposite example on some other destinations. If I look at my hometown, Madrid, it's incredible how the city has been able to transform itself and grow during the pandemic. And I think the openness that we have had during the pandemic, which basically means that after 3 months of lockdown, we have been able to leave the city and go outside. Restaurants have always been opened with less capacity, more capacity. Then we had this policy of being able to, for all those restaurants, to open terraces. And the economy has been moving very fast in Madrid. So you really see actually the opposite. Cities that were fantastic, that has gone through the next level, to the next level, probably thanks to the pandemic or to the different measures that some smart politicians have made during the pandemic.
Yeah, makes sense. So talking of another city, I think your second photograph is of your children, but this time in London. Please tell us about this one.
Well, that's a great city, Michael. So I've been there like 4 times since the pandemic, and I do not see losing the spark. But it's true that some people were missing, and now we're seeing the business, fortunately enough, recovering, because we have 2 hotels in London, and we have suffered a lot. But now we see that, again, occupancies are very high, ADRs are coming. But it's true that London, we love the city, and again, as New York, of course, a little bit closer to Madrid, we've been there like 4 or 5 times per year, always on personal trips, but we never took the kids to London. And this was one of the missing things that we wanted to do during the pandemic. It's true that my kids, when we started with COVID, my oldest daughter was 4, my youngest kid was 2. So now they were 6 and 4. So we had a chance to do a family trip together at the beginning of the year. So we took a few days of holidays during the Easter time, and we spent Easter in London, and it was absolutely fantastic. They behaved very well in the plane, you know, after 2 years without traveling and not being in the plane. So they were, again, surprised to fly and look, see the clouds and playing in the plane. And then, of course, in London, getting to the tube and doing all the different attractions that you can do in London. And one of the greatest things, and that's why I chose the picture, is we did everything you can do in London for 4 days. And when we asked them, okay, what has been your favorite picture and your favorite attraction in London? They said, oh, for sure, visiting the statue of Peter Pan. Because, of course, we read all these stories just before going to bed, and they've read everything about Peter Pan. They've watched all the movies, all the TV shows about Peter Pan. And then they felt that Peter Pan was actually real when we were at Hyde Park and taking this picture and, of course, enjoying Hyde Park and the Peter Pan statue. It was fantastic. Lovely. And again, we were very lucky. We always bring the sun from Spain with us when we travel.
You should come more often. Well, I mean, they must be very fortunate. You sort of been in hoteliers, with the NH Collection and with minor hotels around the world. I mean, they're in an enviable position to really at some point go and visit lots and lots of exciting places. I think as a child, that must be a great opportunity and something that you must enjoy sharing with them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it's true that at one point you try to bring souvenirs and from all these different trips that you do. But when you travel on a weekly basis, if you get them used to different souvenirs or presents, then you will face a nightmare, because then you are at the airport. I mean, you are traveling for business. So it's not like you have the time to shop for souvenirs or presents. So you get at the airport and then you have this pressure of not missing the plane and at the same time getting something for the kids. So I stopped at the beginning of the year. So guys, I started traveling September, back from COVID, September 2021. So I was bringing in presents and souvenirs. But then since January, I said, listen, this is over. So do not expect anything from these trips. But you always share these stories with them. I FaceTime with them if I can before taking off, or just when I land from the plane. So you try to share all this experience with the kids and connect them to the world of travel, which is fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah, good. And talking of souvenirs, this is your souvenir is related to your business. It's a hard hat with the NH logo on it. Tell me why you've chosen that.
Well, it's this is coming from a trip to Amsterdam when I first joined NH Hotel Group in 2014. So we were transforming the organization. We were transforming the company like 180 degrees. And one of the things that we did is we created a new brand. Before, when I just joined in 2014, we only had two brands, which was NH Hotels. Actually, it was in Spanish, NH Hoteles. And now, then we were running Hesperia Hotels as well, hotels and resorts, which now is no longer part of the portfolio. But then we had this project to transform the company. And then we created another brand, which was NH Collection. And our flagship NH Collection was going to be the NH Collection Grand Hotel Krasnapolski in Amsterdam. So when you look at the presence that NH has in such a wonderful city as Amsterdam, with over 13 hotels, we are the first operator in Amsterdam with all these different brands, and having the Krasnapolski at the Dam Square going through a huge refurbishment, it was very encouraging. And we visited the works, and then after visiting the works, looking at the mock-up room, the new lobby, the new venues, looking at this winter garden, which is unique for over 400 people in the middle, in the pre-center of Amsterdam, at Dam Square, they just gave me this as a souvenir. And then people were saying, hey, what am I going to do with this? And I said, oh, I know I'm going to keep it. I know I'm going to keep it, and I'm going to have it on a very important space in my house. And I keep it. Now, the beauty is that thanks to Minor, when they acquired NH Hotel Group at the end of 2018, they are bringing new brands to NH, and we are bringing our brands to the markets in Asia Pacific and the Middle East or Africa. And now we have transformed and we have rebranded the Krasnapolski into Anantara. So this hat, let's say, it's no longer valid. It's for my memories as an NH collection, but now this hotel went through another refurbishment, huge investment, and now has been rebranded to Anantara, Grand Hotel Krasnapolski, which is our luxury brand.
Yeah, yeah. And it's part of your journey. It's part of that story and a story of the hotel as well, which is fascinating. So as a hotelier, you would have experienced many strange and unusual things happening, particularly on property. So before we wrap up, because we're rapidly getting to the end of the conversation, please tell me about your faulty towers moment, as we call it.
Oh, my God. I mean, I would have a few of those. And I have to say that most of them, they are when I was working at property. So it's true that I've been working since, I think it's 2004, 2005 at headquarters in different companies and organizations. But my first years, I started at the Hotel Ritz in Madrid, and then I moved to the Hotel Hesperia in Madrid, which was the first contemporary five-star hotel in Madrid. We had an amazing experience, pretty bad experience, actually, I have to say, where we were almost victim of a huge fraud. So it was a family, it was a guy that was coming from London, sorry, Michael, that was coming from London, and he booked basically the entire ninth floor, which had all the presidential suites, both of them, the two executive suites, and then some superior and standard rooms, because there was a family, one of the royal families from Saudi Arabia, coming to Madrid, and they wanted to basically take over one floor and do many things. We had all the details. They were flying on a private jet to Madrid. which was real because we checked and everything was confirmed with a private jet, etc. And then one of the things that they were saying is that we had to invest in the presidential suite. We had to do some changes because when they would come to the hotel, they would need something special. I think it was in the terrace, like some furniture and some other stuff to avoid having the sun facing it. And then one of the requirements was that we had to buy for the father of the family, we had to buy a Louis Vuitton bag, and then we had to add 100,000 euros into the bag because he would need pocket money for his personal buying. And there was a point. I mean, now it sounds like, okay, we are crazy on how would you do it? And actually, of course, we didn't do it, but we almost did it. We almost did it because everything was so real, and this guy was coming in 1 hour. And he was going to spend so much money in the hotel. And, of course, spraying everything with American Express Centurion. So everything was, in theory, backed up. And we were ready. Actually, we got the money. And it was on our safety box at the, the main safety box at the hotel. But, of course, we always said, okay, well, we bought the purse, by the way. And then we returned purse. I went with the guy personally because I was in charge of service management. And then hopefully, we were smart enough in the last moment to read that something was wrong and that we were being victim of fraud. And we finally didn't do it. But it was 2 days of first great motivation, being able to have such spend happening at the hotel. You were looking forward to having these revenues coming to the hotel with this ADR. And then, of course, then you had the hassle saying, okay, should we do it or should we not? And everything was perfect. I mean, the flight was confirmed. We talked to the airport. The flight was coming. But it was everything fake.
The whole trip was a hoax.
The whole thing was a fraud. So from one moment to the other, we stopped listening to this guy. He didn't come to the hotel. The one who was organizing the trip, he took the Louis Vuitton purse. It was mad after looking at the expense and the 100,000 that we would have lost. It was nothing. No? So it was a horrible experience, I have to say. But big lesson.
Indeed. Wow. Well, it's almost, in hindsight, you look back and you can laugh at these moments, but I'm sure at the time it was, terrifying.
Horrible.
Yeah. But, Fernando, we've come to our very short conversation together, but it's been absolutely brilliant, absolutely fascinating. And just want to thank you one last time for being on Photographs and Memories.
Thank you for having me. Next time we see each other in Madrid.
Absolutely. That's the deal.
Photographs and Memories, sponsored by Atomize, produced by Haynes Marcoms as a Travel Market Life series. For more, visit travelmarket.life.